Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. I too want to welcome the visitors. Glad to have some of you here this morning. And I do enjoy being back here again on a Sunday morning. Of course, I was here Wednesday evenings, but I think the last Sunday morning I was here, I preached. I was trying to remember because it was Bible school last Sunday and the Sunday before we were at Calvary. And I think the one before that was the Sunday we didn't have church because of the weather. So the Sunday before that I preached. But it is good to be here together and look into the Word. I did enjoy my time at Bible school. It had been quite a few years since I was there, and 17 to be exact, and 20 years since I had been there for the first time. And there's roughly 60 students, plus teachers and their families and the principals and the cooks and their families. So it was nice to see that happening again. And I think it's good it is down there in Mississippi. It just has a real nice family atmosphere. So I was, again, encouraged by that. Don't need to be afraid to send our youth down there. I think it's a good place. Well, for a message this morning, I like to think about probably a simple subject. I like to think about seeking Jesus. And I thought I was going to preach on something else this morning, but after the Bible study with Phil George earlier in the week and looking at John chapter 6, I was really encouraged by that and the simplicity of the gospel. And so I'd like to look at some thoughts from John chapter 6 and seeking Jesus. That's the title of the message. Here we have a man that is claiming to be the Son of God. John chapter 6, well, the whole New Testament really, but we have a man that's claiming to be the Son of God, and this creates a dilemma, because if it's untrue, it's simply a man trying to lift himself up by his own bootstraps, trying to be famous, trying to create a following, and it's of very little consequence if it's not true. It's just another person trying to make a fool out of themselves. If it's not true. People make a lot of claims all the time, and we read about them more than ever because of modern forms of communication, and we read about what people try to claim they are and what they can do and what they think they've figured out, and some of them we laugh at. But here's a man that claims that he was the Son of God. Now, if it's not true, it's no big deal. But if it is true, then this has huge ramifications, if this is actually true, that this man was God, as he said he was. It means that God was literally there. It means that our Creator was visiting us. It means if we have a problem, there's somebody here to fix the problem. So it forces us to do something with this man. Are we going to believe it? Or are we not going to believe it? And there are people that lightly dismiss this as not being true. And there's other people that believe it. And I'm thankful today that we're part of a group that does believe it. And so I come to this subject slightly biased. I do believe it's true, but how can we know? How can we know if Jesus is who he said he is? Well, how do we figure out if anything's true? We look for some facts. We look at some experiments. We look for any evidence that we can figure out a way if it's true or not. And one of the things we look for is eyewitnesses, someone who was there. And there were eyewitnesses in the time of Jesus' day. And they wrote down what they saw, what they heard. And we have a historical record. We call it the Bible today. This is one of the records that we have that, you know, tells us about the life of Jesus. We also have multiple eyewitnesses. Now, this is very important that you have multiple eyewitnesses, because you need something to substantiate the claim. In today's world, we use a term called corroboration. If there's someone that brings an accusation against somebody else, you need to have multiple witnesses to prove it, or multiple facts to prove it. I can't simply go accuse somebody of doing something to me and that person gets punished. No, we don't do that. If something happened, you have to have proof of some kind, or more than one person that saw it happen. And once you have multiple witnesses, we have a truth. So there's always skepticism when it's only one person telling the story. But when there's multiple people, we say it's proven. And we have that with the Bible. We have multiple sources. And the archaeological record of people and places that this book talks about, we can still see evidence of that today over in the land of Israel. And it's still a hot spot like it was 2,000 years ago. So we have a lot of reason to believe that what we read in the Bible is true. And back in the book of Deuteronomy, the law said, "One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth." Not one witness. "But at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established." So we want to look at how can we figure out if Jesus is the Son of God or not. So I'd like to read the first 29 verses first here and then look at some of these things. And then I would like to look at the rest of the passage for our thoughts this morning. So start with John chapter 6, verse 1. "After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him, because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes, and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, When shall we buy bread, that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? Jesus said, Make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. And when they were filled, he said unto the disciples, Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together, and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, This is of a truth that the prophet should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down unto the sea and entered into a ship and went over the sea toward Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the sea, and drawing nigh unto the ship, they were afraid. But he saith unto them, It is I, be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at land whither they went. The day following, when the people which stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was none other boat there, save the one wherewith his disciples were entered, and that Jesus was not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit, there came other boats from Tiberias nigh unto the place where they did eat bread, after that the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping, and came to Capernaum, seeking for Jesus. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me, not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do, that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is a work of God, that ye believe on him whom he hath sent. So So here we have a couple different accounts that say something about Jesus. How do we know that we can believe that Jesus is the Son of God? We have to look at what the people said who were there with him. And these miracles say something about Jesus. Now, in 1 Corinthians 1:22, he said, "For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom." And the Greeks, the Gentiles, they loved to reason and to argue and thereby decide what was truth and what wasn't truth. But the Jews, they didn't believe that way. They were used to following God, and they looked for a miracle. They looked for God to reveal himself in some way or another. They wanted a supernatural proof. That's what they wanted. So this is who God had taught them to be, rather than just relying on their smarts or their senses. He wanted them to look for a supernatural proof, and this is still who they were today. And so these Jews were looking for a sign, and they were asked him multiple times for a sign. But in verse 2, he talks about the miracles which he did on them that were diseased. They had seen these miracles, and they were looking for more. And this is one of the proofs that Jesus was the Son of God, that he had the power over the human body, that he had the power over disease and handicaps. Where do they come from? Well, we know the Bible teaches that diseases come because of our sin, but we talk to anybody today, they'll say that it's just because we're alive. The only way to get away from disease is to die, and you don't have it anymore. But as long as we live here, we have diseases. We have handicaps. It's just part of living. And some are for a short time. People get the flu. Slowly comes on them. Well, sometimes quickly, but slowly goes away. But then you have some handicaps that are for life, like blindness. And you get it when you're little, and maybe you're born with it. Maybe something happens to you, you're in an accident, but you keep it for the rest of your life. And there's other sicknesses that we get that once you get them, we say, well, that's a terminal illness. You're going to die from that. You get cancer or something like that. We consider it usually it's a terminal illness, especially if it's advanced. But here we have a person that the diseases obeyed. The diseases obeyed Jesus. And so we know that for this one, this is one of the witnesses that Jesus was the Son of God. The diseases obeyed him. And the second thing that we have in this passage as a witness is the story of feeding the 5,000 men. How could this happen? You know, we're used to food being multiplied, but we're used to it taking a long time. You have to put the seed in the ground. You have to let it grow for a whole season. You hope for rain, and not too much rain. And at the end, you have a harvest, and you have more food. But here we have a situation where we have a man that started handing out food, and it didn't stop till everyone was fed. And it happened in an instant. And how could this be? This was another miracle that proved that Jesus was more than just a man, that he was who he said he was. Hollidaysburg has just over 5,000. Tyrone's right around 5,000 people. And now I think in the other passage it says besides women and children, that there would have been a good bit more than that. But when you think about everybody in the whole town coming out for a meal, and where would you get all that food? It helps put it into perspective. Even if everybody descended on the few eating places that are in Hollidaysburg, I don't know if they'd have enough of food to feed everybody with what they have in there. But here we have all these people coming for 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. And when they were done, they had 12 baskets left over. Only Jesus can do that. It's the second witness that we have. Multiplication of food. There's another witness right at the end of that story, but I'm going to wait to bring that up. In verses 16 to 21, we have the story about Jesus. When he left there, he told them, "You go ahead and go to the other side, and I'll meet up with you later." And the disciples got in the boat and head across the Sea of Galilee. I don't know which way they were going, but it's a little over 13 miles wide, depending on which way you go across the Sea of Galilee. And it says they went between 25 or 30 furlongs, which I think a furlong was about 220 yards. So you're getting out there a couple miles, maybe 3 miles, 2 or 3 miles across the water. They were trying to go across this lake, and the wind was becoming worse and worse, and they just weren't able to hardly make progress anymore. Now, if you go from Altoona, like from 17th Street to Tyrone, it's just over 13 miles. It's probably about 15 miles. But you think about how long that lake was, and they're trying to row a boat from 17th Street to beyond the Grazierville exit, and the weather is against them. To give you a little idea as to what this lake looked like, they made it about 3 miles before Jesus came to the rescue. And some of the other passages, Gospels, have a few more details about this story. But we know that Jesus came and calmed the sea and got in the boat with them. Well, no, it doesn't really. They willingly received him into the ship. So he got in the boat. But it says immediately the ship was at the land whither they went. And if you look it up in the Strong's, it says immediately. That's what the word means, immediately. So it seems like there's a miracle that happened right there. And as soon as they got in the boat and they were looking at Jesus and saying, you know, we're just so glad to have you here. You saved us. We weren't getting anywhere. And all of a sudden they looked around and realized they were at the shore. That's what it appears that happened, that they supernaturally were at the other side. Now, the people were really... wonder what had happened here. It wasn't just the story the disciples came up with, because when the people came down to the sea the next day, they were looking for Jesus. Now, they knew the disciples had left, but Jesus hadn't left. They didn't see him get in the boat. And they looked around, and there was no other boat that could have taken Jesus away from there, but Jesus wasn't there. And they couldn't figure it out. And so they said, well, let's get in our boats. Let's go to the other side, and let's at least see where the disciples are. They wanted to see Jesus. And when they got there, here Jesus was there with them. And they're like, well, how did this happen? How did Jesus get to the other side of the sea with these people? And it's just one more confirmation that this story is true and that Jesus is who he said he was. It's another proof of his deity. Another proof that I see here, besides the miracles that he did, is in verse 15. If you look at verse 15, well, let's just read 14 and 15. Then these men, when they had seen the miracles that Jesus did, said, this is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. So here you have the people believing that Jesus is the Messiah, who they're looking for. But they didn't realize that he was not just to be a king. He was an eternal king. And so they wanted to make him a king for right here, right now. And Jesus in his integrity, this says something about Jesus' integrity, because he did not allow them to do that. If he would have been just a man, he probably would have allowed them to take him and let him be their king. But he wasn't just a man. If you look at anybody else that's looking for fame, or, you know, that's trying to say they are somebody, when people start giving them attention, it goes to their head. And they think they are somebody. And oftentimes it ends up ruining them. But this is another proof that Jesus was more than just a person, more than just a man. Because he did not allow that to get in his way of his mission. That if he would have accepted that call for him to be king of the country of Israel, or whatever they would have called it then, that would have limited him to being a king of that time and that place. But Jesus' call was beyond that, and he kept them from allowing him to make that so that his kingdom could be unlimited, eternal. And so Jesus' kingdom today is in every kingdom on earth. There's followers of Jesus everywhere, and it's an internal kingdom. It's on the inside. It's not an external kingdom that we have. And so I just find it amazing that Jesus said, no, I don't want that. I am going to be God. Is it worth our time seeking after Jesus? Is it worth our time? Do we still have needs today? Yes, we do, don't we? We still have sin. We still have guilt. We have pain. We have dying dreams. We have broken relationships. And these are all things that Jesus can help us with. Does man have the answers for these things? We think we do. We think we have the answer to sin and to guilt. One of the first things we do is we deny it. We deny it. We think the answer to our sin problem or to our guilt is to deny it. We lie about it. Then it's not there, right? That's what we do. We act like it doesn't exist. And this is dangerous to deny our sin and our guilt, to deny our problems, because it doesn't make them go away. It makes us think they go away. And eventually we become deceived. If you're out here walking across the busy street, and suddenly you realize a vehicle's coming right at you, and the driver isn't looking, he's looking off to the side, would you say, I'll just act like it's not there. I'll just act like it's not there, then I'll be okay. We say, no, we're not going to do that. So why do we do that with our sin? Why do we just act like it's not there? Act like we don't have a problem. Is that the answer? No, that's not the answer. The answer is not to deny it. Another thing that we do is we drown it out. We drown it out. So it's there, but if I fill my life up with lots of other things, then it'll be okay. And so we hear God speaking in our life, but we don't listen. We fill our life up with too much work, or too much travel, or too much partying, or too much pleasure, gambling. You know, there's all kind of things people do on the weekends to try to fill it up. There's other vices, personal vices, moral vices that we have that we use to drown out our trouble. This is a reason that we warn a lot about earthly things. And sometimes we think the preachers get too practical too much of the time. Well, the reason we have to get practical is because these are the things that drown out our spiritual reasoning. It's why we regulate some of these things, because they have the potential to overcome our spiritual reasoning. If you wake up one morning and your face is puffy and your jaw hurts, you realize you have a toothache. You realize there's infection somewhere there's not supposed to be. What do? Just keep taking Tylenol, take some and take some more, and hopefully it goes away. Maybe if it was minor, it will. If we have a need in our personal life, what's the answer? Do we just numb it with something? Or do we stop and think? You know, I've been living on candy and soda for a long time. In fact, I keep it on my nightstand in my bedroom just in case I need it during the night. I haven't brushed my teeth in a long time. What do? Reach for another candy bar? You say, well, that's a little silly. But isn't that what we do with sin before we know Christ? You know, we live on it all the time. We take more and more and more. And when it's creating pain in our life, we just reach out and do it again, and hopefully it takes it away. Why do we do this spiritually? Jesus came to live among us and give us a better life. Just wait till that sugar gets back into that rotten tooth again. We grimace with the pain, but later on, we do it again. Just keep kicking that can down the road and keep walking back up on it again, thinking it'll go away. No, we need to get rid of it. John chapter 6, let's go down to verse 30 and read down to verse 40. What is the answer to our soul's needs? Then they said therefore unto him, what sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? Why are they asking this question? They had just seen who Jesus was. Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Here they're asking for more physical food. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Jesus was speaking about himself. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that ye also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven, not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him who hath that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Do we have an appetite for the bread of life? Get an appetite for the bread of life. That's how Jesus can make a difference. Here these people were hungry, but they were hungry for the wrong thing. They weren't hungry for Jesus as a person. They were hungry for the physical things that he gave up. They wanted him to just keep giving them manna for the rest of their life. And a lot of people want to preach that health and wealth gospel today, that if you live for Jesus, you'll just be happy ever after. And it doesn't work that way. Jesus said, well, we know that that's false doctrine because of what Jesus said right here. He said, that's not the true bread. Telling people, giving people physical food, cars, nice houses, all this stuff doesn't make them Christians, doesn't make them better people. When we give them the bread of life, then we become better people, when we become Jesus. We sure can develop an appetite for good food, can't we, in a physical way? We can, and we show it. Have we developed an appetite for Jesus, that we want to know how he lived and how he died and what he means to us today? Let's learn everything we can. That's number one. Get an appetite for the true bread. Second thing, well, this goes on down through the next couple of verses. It's hard to know where to start and to stop. Probably should read a couple of those verses. Yeah, let's read down to verse 59 and take a few more thoughts, thinking about Jesus being the true bread. Then the Jews murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, murmur not among yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man hath seen the Father, save he which is of God, he hath seen the Father. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the bread of life which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. And the Jews therefore strove among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye shall have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As a living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is the bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. These things said he in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. So you see the sequence of events as you go through the story. Jesus is talking to the same people. He healed them. He gave them food. He did these miracles. And then he brings them closer and closer and closer to the truth. They start asking him for more bread. And then he says, look, physical bread doesn't heal. You need spiritual bread. But they couldn't understand that they needed spiritual bread. They were not allowing God to draw them for the right reasons. They wanted the physical. They didn't want the spiritual in their life. So the second thing we need to do is allow the Father to draw us through the Spirit. Verse 44, no man cometh to me except the Father, which hath sent me, draw him. We need to allow ourselves to be drawn. We know that it will end well if we follow God. And we easily follow people. What do you know about President Trump? Actually, probably pretty much. What do you know about, I could mention different sports figures, and people know a lot about them. We allow ourselves to be influenced and to learn about these people. We wouldn't have to. We didn't have to read any news or anything. We could ignore it and we could live just fine. But we allow ourselves to follow these things. We're influenced by philosophers and authors, influenced by motivational speakers. Why not follow God? Why not allow ourselves to be drawn by Him? Jesus also said here that we need to believe. We need to have faith. We need to trust Him. He makes it really simple. He says, just believe on me. I am the one that was sent to save you. Just believe on me. I am your bread. Just believe. And these people did not want to believe. So we need to believe and have faith and trust. We need to identify with one side or the other. Do we believe that Jesus is the Son of God or don't we? That's how simple the gospel really is. That's how simple it is. Well, they get all caught up in this thing of, it seems like once you got down to verse 51, Jesus said, okay, if you people aren't going to believe this, I'm just going to go ahead and speak in a parable and let you people be offended. He tried. You can see he really tried. And then he said, okay, it's time to separate between the people that really want the truth and the people that don't want the truth. And so he said, you need to eat me. You need to drink me. And then you will be a part of God. Because I came from God. You need to just eat and drink me. And what he was really talking about was what he was going to put his body through. He was going to allow his body to be hung on a cross and put in a grave. He was going to allow his body to be humiliated. We must not be offended by the cross. We must not be offended by this fact that we have to lay this earthly vessel down. We have to follow through. So don't be offended by the cross. That's the fourth thing I have when seeking Jesus. Don't be offended by the cross. Let's read verse 60 through 69 here yet. One more thing that we need to think about we'll read to the end. Many therefore of his disciples, when they heard this, said, this and an hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, doth this offend you? What, and if ye shall see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It is the Spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not, and who should betray him. And he said, therefore I said unto you, that no man come unto me except it were given him unto him of my Father. From that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. Then Jesus said unto the 12, will ye also go away? Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. And we believe and are sure that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus answered them, have not I chosen you 12, and one of you is a devil? He spake of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for he it was that should betray him, being one of the 12. So you see there in verse, the disciples, they struggled at the thought, and they said, who can really understand this? And Jesus said, aren't you going to understand? What are you going to do when you see me go up into heaven? What are you going to do if you see someone go up in the sky and disappear? How can you not believe the miracles of healing, the miracles of food, the miracles of calming the storm? And what are you going to do if you see the miracle of someone going up into the sky? What's that going to do to you? Are you going to believe or aren't you going to believe? Fifth thing I have here in seeking Jesus is don't trade your soul. Don't trade your soul for the temporal. Don't trade it. Many of these disciples, they were offended, and they traded their soul to go back and enjoy the life that they had before. Where are we at today? And Jesus specifically spoke of Judas Iscariot because he knew he was going to be betrayed. What are we going to do with our lives? Well, I just want to encourage us again today that we do seek Jesus because he is the Messiah. He is our Savior. And he is worth knowing. And he can change our life. And in the end, we will have an eternal reward. Let's kneel for prayer.